I'll consistently state this, that the very best sides will play the hardest brand of footy, and we're going to overstep the mark sometimes. Do I want us to be giving away stupid free kicks or 50-metre penalties? No, I don't. And the players understand that. They accept responsibility. We've got to get better in that part of the game. So we'll continue to improve it. We'll continue to learn from it. We've just got to not put ourselves in that situation. But, yeah, the game's going to be pretty volatile. We'll get out of a hostile environment against a very, very good opposition. So we want to play on the edge.
Damien Hardwick, coach of the Tigers, continuing to push the theme of big boy footy, effectively, after last weekend. And I'm sure there's plenty of questions about it, so that's why he keeps referencing it. But continuing to push that theme, Brad Johnson is a big boy. He was one of the biggest of big boys when he was playing for the mighty Western Bulldogs, and he joins us on a Thursday morning throughout the AFL season. Great to have him with us. Jono, good morning.
Good morning, Harv. Good morning, Whitey. How are you guys?
We're going well, thank you. We're going well, although we could be a lot better. We could be a lot better because we could have been informed, Adam, and we'll get to Damien Hardwick shortly. We could have been informed that King of Swing was in on Sunday.
Oh, no.
You know what happened to King of Swing?
Well, my understanding was King of Swing had gone to the paddock.
Well, that's what we were told on air by its Leviathan owner, Brad Johnson.
Yes.
King of Swing ran on Sunday, do you know? Do you know where King of Swing came?
I believe it. Well, from what you're insinuating, it may have greeted the judge.
First past the post.
It is an all-time low,
Brad.
It's an all-time high. What are you talking about,
Brad? What the hell happened?
You know what, Half? Well, after the feedback that I received, I passed that on to the king, and I had to look him in the eye and say, "What are we going to do here? Are we going to spell, or are we going to dig deep, grind the teeth, and push through one more time?" And you know what the king did? He wanted to prove you guys wrong. So he went out there. He got box one. So he thought, here we go. We're a chance. Started well, second at the turn, got through inside rail. And yes, he greeted the judges on Sunday. So that means, you know what that means, Harv? And I know we've followed the journey of King of Swing because he loves racing on a Thursday. Well, guess when the final is? The final is tonight.
Oh, no,
Thursday
it's not.
At Sandown. At 9:40 p.m. Now, the only issue with the king tonight is he's drawn box six, which does hurt the great man. But ultimately, he was the best when it came across all the heats last Sunday. So he is a chance, yes, again tonight. I don't know what we're going to get, Half. Who knows what the king will produce for us out of box six? But there is some better runners inside. It's some speed inside him in boxes one and two. So a place bet tonight might be the option for the King of Swing, but once again, he stands up under pressure, and that's what I love about the the beautiful little pup that we have.
What did the king pay, just by the way, on Sunday
night? That's a really good question. I can get back to you on that because I've just got to go to my account, which has a little bit of ching in it. After the king.
Now you're hurting us.
Had a win, and I can tell you exactly what he paid. Because I've had a couple of other little... where is it here? The King of Swing paid... and I cannot find it. $3.30. So $3.30. Yeah.
Well, we could have been back in front after all the investments we've made on the King. Yeah. That's harsh. $7.50 tonight, race. Here you go, Whitey. We're talking about race 6, number 6. $9.50 tonight, Jono. You've missed it at $9.50. Oh, $9.40.
Sorry. We're all over the shop.
$7.50 at the tab. In the fixed markets, early doors. Yeah, you've got a $1.65 favourite coming out of box one tonight, so you're in trouble tonight. I'm not getting on tonight. Getting on. Well done to the king.
He's in former. Yeah, well, it is. It's good. After the feedback, yep.
It's so great effort to win.
We ride the roller coaster with the king. It's been good fun.
It's a great effort to win when you're spelling. It's a great effort. Well done to the king. And for detailed form guides and watch every Victorian Greyhound race live and free like you can, the king tonight, race 6, number 6 at Sandown Park. Simply download the Watchdog app or follow Watchdog Racing on Twitter or Facebook and you'll catch up with Jono's megastar, the King of Swing. Goodness me. Just keep going back to Damien Hardwick, Jono, because we don't want to get caught up in that. We'll get a bit emotional.
Yes.
He's big on this big boy footy, and it's a hard and tough game of recent weeks. There's been some actions from some of his players that have caught the eye of footy fans, and not for the right reasons. But what's your take on all that sort of stuff from Richmond's perspective? Because I think it has created, and we'll speak to Camden McIntosh a little bit later on, I think it has created a theme for them, almost an us-against-them mentality. Everyone's coming for us, so we'll show you your dogs, or we'll show you. We'll show you we're the best team in it. Because you've got to find a motivation. I imagine when you've been successful for that period of time, you've got to find a little edge somewhere. And this might be theirs.
Well, it's the hunter versus the hunted theory, isn't it? In terms of everyone's coming for the best time, best side over the last 5 years, no doubt. And that's probably why they're trying to take that initiative back and have that mentality that we need to hunt, not allow others to hunt us. And it probably comes back to that old theory that we used to go through half in sort of the 90s and early 2000s, the way the coaches used to talk to us in terms of when you're in a successful side that's playing well over a period of years. But with the Tigers, it's really interesting because they are a tough team. We see that every single week. And you even look at last week with Tom Lynch and the talk around the little knee that he dropped into his opponent. It just wasn't required. Like he crashed a pack in the first quarter that caused a goal to Bolton, which was an unbelievable play from him, and then Bolton at ground level. Patton comes off with the blood. I know Damien Hardwick referenced that yesterday as well. But that's the type of toughness we see all the time from Richmond. So they don't need to then add a layer to it of dropping a knee in or even what Trent Cotchin did to Jones, where he got him high but then did the little bit of extra and nearly ripped his head off. Like, I thought that was lucky not to get looked at sort of as well. But those things just aren't required from Richmond, because I see them as a tough team anyway. They are physical. They are super competitive when it comes to wanting to win that tough ball. So therefore, the layer of the knee or doing something that can hurt the team with a 50-metre penalty or put them in a position to play on that edge to jump over it to possibly get suspended in a big final, it's not necessary on an already tough team.
I think the interesting conversation around this is if you look back in history, just the last, say, 20-odd years, Hawthorn was seen as the unsociable Hawks and they played on the edge and it was one of the key planks to their success. Brisbane, I'm not sure whether they quite played on the edge, but they had a real toughness and brutality about the way that they played their footy, particularly with, you know, the Scott brothers or Michael Voss and these sorts. He had a couple of other enforcers that were sort of on the periphery. And then even Essendon with Hardwick and Solomon and the Johnsons and these sorts of things through 2000. But with Richmond, I'm not sure you necessarily associate with them through this successful era. This seems to be a new thing. And I just wonder whether you'd describe it as being characteristic or uncharacteristic of this group.
Well, I think the Brisbane Lions are the perfect example of that team that was just... They were so difficult to play against. Like, they were genuinely tough, but at the ball playing tough. Not sniper tough, not a layer of putting you on the ground and then pushing your chest into it or pushing your head through the dirt. They'd hit you and hit you hard and then get up and just go to the next contest and hit you again. And we experienced that hard for a number of years, and that's why they were so difficult to play against. That's the difference between Richmond and Brisbane of that era that we talk about. The Tigers are genuinely tough. They do have the midfield toughness like Brisbane did at that time. They do have the power forwards and the key backs that can hurt you like Brisbane did in that era. But they don't, like I said, it's those layers they're adding to it to try and manufacture a little bit of edginess to the way they play, which isn't required. It is not required. Brisbane back then were the perfect example, Whitey, and I'm glad you brought them up, because they had just had some big, strong, fierce bodies, competitors in every line, especially their back line, that would play tough. And once that ball hit the ground or once it left the area, they weren't doing anything stupid to put themselves in the vision of being suspended or having to go to the tribunal. They were doing things that were tough and competitive that lasted for years and years. And that's the difference between what I see with Richmond and a side like that in the past.
So, Half, I'm not suggesting this because I don't think it's a major thing, but I think it's definitely a talking point. But my question to you is, and to Jono, do you think Richmond is being like this to almost hang on to something, to search for something, not for necessarily for motivation, but to get themselves going because they are a bit flat? Or do you think it's just evolved this way and it is characteristic? Because I think there's a difference. Sometimes you can almost become an uncharacteristic in a team sense and go away from what made you a good football team.
I wouldn't mind betting that there's been an element of what's happened and some of the events through the year that's led to this for Richmond. Not necessarily because it's who they are, but what it's become, but it's evolved, like you're saying, through the year, that they've had a few setbacks and a few storylines along the way that haven't sort of gone their way, and there's maybe been a little bit of frustration and edge about them to survive the hub life. And we've heard from teams that have come home since, Jono, that it wasn't easy, and some players didn't cope with it, and some teams didn't cope with it very well at all. I wouldn't mind betting that the Tigers have been through a bit of that, and they've had to sort of just get out there and release their frustrations at times from what's happened to them through the season. And the Tom Lynch example is a classic one, I reckon. I'm a bit like you. It's not a massive issue from my perspective, but I think it is now becoming a bit of a theme. And the fact that Damien keeps talking about it or keeps referencing that style of footy as being, which is the style of footy he played, hard nose, hard edge footy. He was successful with that style. I'm sure he'd love to see a little bit of that in his players, which, as you rightly say, is not necessarily a characteristic of the team if you look at them as a whole in the last 4 years. So I think it's nice to hang on to leading into finals campaign, because we all know, Jono, the toughest teams survive. Now, there's tough and there's stupid. There's a blurry line there at some stage too, but the toughest teams are often the ones who survive through a finals campaign, because it's hard yards.
Well, that's right. You mentioned those things that have happened throughout the year, and you need things to be going perfect. So maybe they have manufactured this side of things just to mentally get them back. You try and get themselves back into that sweet spot where they play unbelievable footy, and they're back to their very best in their ball movement and the way they're going about it. But they just can't in this final against Port Adelaide. It's going to be on. It's going to be tough. It's going to be fierce against Richmond, St Kilda, who brought no pressure whatsoever. They're going to get a different tale this week against Port Adelaide. So that whole bubble underneath, I think, is important for the cauldron they're about to step into it at Adelaide Oval. And maybe mentally that's what will allow them to get switched on in the early stages of what will be, I think, probably of the two finals, the most fierce.
All right, so I'm going to ask both of you a question without notice. And I don't know the answer to this question, and I think it just shows how good these finals are going to be. I want you to rank the four teams in seeding order in your view. So not to go off the betting odds or not to go off ladder positions, but with the four left, if you had to rank them 1 to 4, what would be your order? Because I reckon this is really difficult.
I'm going Port Adelaide, Geelong, Richmond, Brisbane. There you go. It's difficult. It's easy in my mind, I should say, for me to rank them. Just from my viewpoint, from what I've seen throughout the entire season this year. Port Adelaide, the best team in the comp throughout the year. They've played the best football, the most consistent football. Geelong aren't too far behind them, and prove that they can, once they get their side sorted, they play some unbelievable footy like last week. Richmond are the ones that have been up and down throughout the year a little bit, players in and out of the side, but you know they rank third for me in terms of over the year so far. And then Brisbane are just a little bit of the unknown. I think that of the four lists, they've probably got some players that are probably still developing and the most vulnerable in terms of where they sit come prelim final weekend.
Brisbane, Port, Richmond, Geelong.
Ooh. See, we see Brisbane differently out of the four. Yeah,
that's interesting.
That's why it's so good, isn't it? Yeah, it's really good.
But yeah, that's right.
They're difficult to pick this week, and that's why it's...
I'm leaning towards the seeds in terms of the top teams, Brisbane and Port winning this weekend. So yep. They've got to put them in first and second spot. And the Gabba factor plays into Brisbane's hands. So that's why they become the first seed. Port Adelaide have been magnificent. And then you've got to work out who loses the other games and where they fit in the other two spots. There's not much in it. There's not much in it. It doesn't really... I reckon you could ask 10 different people and get 10 different outcomes in that.
Exactly right. But my point on that is that's what makes this weekend, I think, and the next 2 weeks so fascinating. Usually there is a clear number one seed, and can you knock them off? So from a betting perspective, Jono, at the tab at the moment, Brisbane 340... Richmond $3.80, Port Adelaide $4, Geelong $4.25. So that's a different order in that four yet again. I think it's fascinating.
Do you think Richmond actually put into the AFL to get a couple of layers of turf from the MCG taken up to the Gabba, because they're guaranteeing themselves a spot in the grand final? And we know how well they play on the G, that they just want some of the turf up on the Gabba for the grand final. What about that? Seriously,
do you like that, Johnny?
We're taking a couple of layers of turf in a truck, in a massive semi-trailer. There was two bits of turf in it.
It did seem to be, just as you raised that point, it did seem to be a very large truck for a very small piece of turf.
And it, I would have taken a band.
What else?
A refrigerated truck.
You know what? Because those two layers of turf, unless they rolled them out flat and didn't leave them rolled up, they actually flattened them out. So they needed the length of the truck. That's what I want to know, Harv. I want to know the detail of how these two bits of turf actually made their way to the Gabba in a huge truck. What are we doing? Seriously.
It did seem to be a very big truck for a really small piece of turf. You're right.
They could have driven it up in the boot of a Toyota Yaris.
Yes. One of those little delivery vans, a little pizza delivery van with a high back. That's what they could have done. But it is, it'll be looked after within an inch of its life, that piece of turf, John. Don't you worry about that on the trip up to the Gabba. Putting the G in the Gabba. I love it.
Yes.
Tigers, Port Lions, Cats off the SMS for Scotty and Tigerland. Thank you, Scotty. He's a big Tigers man, so no surprise to see them in pole position.
Surprised he had Richmond so high.
Surprise. Question off the SMS too, does the turf need to quarantine for 14 days? I'm not sure. It's a good question. Let's start there then, Jono. With the Tigers heading across to Port Adelaide. Now, last time they met, it was the Power at the Adelaide Oval, but a different Tigers outfit it was. And that's been pointed out very well, very clearly from certainly Richmond supporters this week going into this game. They were very good against the Saints last week. They were too good for the Saints, and I think we've talked before about the quality of the top four versus perhaps the bottom four in the finals this week, so we didn't perhaps expect anything different from that. But Port Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval altogether is a very different beast. How do you see it?
Yeah, it is. It's going to be electric. It really is. And that's where I think the physicality within this contest is going to be absolutely enormous. Last week that Richmond were able to sort of run around and move the ball as freely as they could. I thought St Kilda would have added a lot more pressure towards the way that they would have played against the Tigers, but they couldn't even touch them, couldn't get near them. So that was the difference that you're talking about. So it'll be different against Port Adelaide. You look through the midfield that both Wines and Powell Pepper and Rockcliffe are not going to allow Richmond to have that freedom in the contest that we saw last week. So Richmond will be prepared for it. They're ready for that, no doubt. So around the ball is going to be quite significant because then you've got the two big pillars up either end, Dixon and Lynch. So that ball movement between the arcs is going to be critical to the type of impact that the two bigs can have. But it's impacting their own game in marking it and going back and slotting their opportunities. But we all understand that both teams have got phenomenal ground-level players as well inside forward 50. So that ball movement becomes important because if it's got a little bit of fluency and speed to it and it gets to Dixon in 1v1s or 1v2s, it's going to come to ground. And then Butters and Robbie Gray and Rosie and these guys are just going to absolutely swoop. Same goes the other end of the ground. So if Lynch gets those opportunities to compete and at least bring the ball to ground, we know you've got Rioli and then Bolton, who's played a little bit more forward last week out of the midfield because Prestia's floating around back in there a little bit more. All of a sudden, they swing. So it's an intriguing, it really is an intriguing matchup. It really is 50-50 through the midfield. It's whether they try to lock away Dusty or what they do there, which will be a good watch to see what Ken Hinckley and the way that he goes about that particular matchup, which is the critical one throughout the game. But overall, they are pretty even when you look at the types of players they have around the contest. So it's going to be an absolute beauty. Can't wait for this one.
Well, that's where they can, Port Adelaide, that's where they can win, is around the contest, because they're so strong there. Not many teams can match Richmond around the contest in general play, but Port Adelaide can. That's almost the hallmark and the foundation stone of their game, isn't it? So that's why they can. If you're a Port Adelaide supporter this week, despite the fact that there might be some changes for the Tigers coming into this team from last time, they can win it because they're good around the contest.
And that's where they've made a major improvement. I mean, Sam Powell Pepper's come back to be the player he was in the first year. Tom Rockcliffe's made clear improvements and adjustments to the way he plays around the contest. Ollie Wines, who had sort of an average year last year in the first half of this year, wasn't great for a number of different reasons. He's back to that bullocking best. So that they've actually made improvements to that part of the game, and we've actually seen a tangible improvement as a result of that. And you know, if you hear other teams reference Port Adelaide, they all talk about their intensity around the contest. Maybe that is the benchmark, and others have got to follow that now if they're gonna go with them.
And yeah, it will be the first 10 minutes. I think that's where we'll know with Port Adelaide that they will be nervous, prelim final at home, 30-odd thousand people, maybe more. I'm not sure how many they're going to fit into the Adelaide Oval. So it's going to be dynamite early. And Port Adelaide, coming from the position they have last year and played unbelievably well. Ken Hinckley, we've got to take our hat off to Ken Hinckley because of the way that he has just handled the year from the start. He put his hand up and said, we're in this to win it. Put himself on the line. He was on the line anyway from the public comments from the president in terms of the chairman, in terms of you've got to play finals to keep your job. Like, imagine having a start of the season like that and then working through in his minor premier. Like, that is a man that can handle any situation. So, therefore, it puts them in a really confident spot knowing that what their coach has done this year, that's why the players are believing in the way his direction, who he is as a coach, and that's why they're jumping on board. In the old terminology, play for the coach, but they are, in a way, they're playing for the club. And sometimes it's rare to see these days because players, they do play for their clubs, but I don't think it's the same as the way that we were brought up to play for your club back in the day. So, but I think Port Adelaide have got that, and I think that's holding them in really good stead.
What about Saturday night? We're going to have a chat to Mark O'Connor in about 15 minutes' time, hopefully, 20 minutes' time, which would be nice. The Irishman, what about that game? Because the gulf between Geelong and Collingwood on last Saturday night, Jono, was vast. It was a significant gulf, and they were awesome from the start. We knew from the start that the game was over within the first couple of minutes. It's a different game against Brisbane, isn't it, at the Gabba?
Yeah, surprisingly, the gap that they were able to put on Collingwood, I thought the Cats would win, but I thought it would go sort of right down to the last probably, 10 minutes of the game in the last quarter to break the Pies open. They did it within, as you said, 5 minutes of the first quarter, which was quite unbelievable in all those facets. But when we talk about the midfields a lot, but Dangerfield stepping to forward last week, I think it only worked because Guthrie in final week one was fumbly, played poorly. Duncan turnovers in the first week of the finals, didn't play great. And then all of a sudden, you've got these two guys that get the opportunity straight back in the midfield again for the Cats, and they dominated, absolutely dominated. So then you had Brandon Parfitt jump on. So Dangerfield's able to go forward and stay there because you've got these other guys that are absolutely playing well on the night to allow that move to happen. If Duncan or Parfitt or Guthrie aren't getting the job done, guess what Chris Scott's doing? He's having to bring Dangerfield straight back into centre bounce. So that's the key for Geelong again in this final against the Brisbane Lions. If they're going to put that forward pressure on with Hawkins, Rowan and Dangerfield forward, then Guthrie, Duncan and Parfitt have to stand up consistently. We know what Joel Sowell will give. So I leave him out of that conversation. It's those other three standing up in a big prelim to allow Dangerfield to play the role that he played. But also last week, you had Myers play better than he did in week one of the finals. Jack Henry was the same. Tom Stewart took 14 marks. I know a lot of those were chip around, but played better football. Gary Ablett had the 10, but was clean and set up the first few goals of the game when coming off the bench. And you've got Mark O'Connor coming on as well. And he was another one that was just cleaner in the contest compared to week one. So they had 10 or so guys that just lifted their ratings from one week to another. And they've got to sustain those again this week to be any chance against the Brisbane Lions. I think they're a better team, the Cats, for where they're at the moment. But the Brisbane Lions, they just keep showing up, don't they? And they've got, I think for me, the Cats have got to watch Daniel Rich, because Daniel Rich has 20-plus. The Brisbane Lions don't lose. They're 5-0 when Daniel Rich has 20-plus disposals. So
good stat.
You've got to watch the Rich man. He's back in some good form, virtual composure across half-back. And then it's just the likes of the youngsters, McCluggage, Berry, and we can roll through them. That can they handle the prelim final pressure now? This is the big stage for these younger developing Brisbane Lions players that have helped grow this club over the last couple of years. And up forwards, obviously, a little bit of a concern. But whether Hipwood, who's had better energy and played better the last probably month, can stand up as well as McStay and take some big grabs up forward.
Imagine Big Joe there, just doing his thing next year.
Ooh, yes. Boy. Well, but that could be the difference half between if they bow out to the Cats, Joe could be the difference to allow them to step into a grand final the following year. So that type of rating and recruiting is critical anyway for Brisbane's sustained success over a period of time now, not just get to the high and drop back down again.
We'll see. It's going to be a good one. That's Saturday night, Brisbane and Geelong. We'll have a chat to Mark O'Connor, not too far away from the Cats. Jono, just on the Beaten Brigade from the weekend, just summaries of St Kilda and Collingwood. A Collingwood, they're probably the more interesting story because of where they've gone the last couple of years. They've slid down the ladder a couple of spots every year, the last 3 years. Are they a list that is a genuine top four contender as it is at the moment? Now, pretend that everyone's, it's all equal and you get the best players out there, so side bottom and how and that sort of stuff. Are they a top four contender as they sit with that list, or do you think that there's some modifications that need to be made?
Oh, there's a couple of modifications I think that possibly need to be made, and they're sliding, and from what, and I'm only going on what I'm reading as well, Harf, and hearing around town about the pressure in terms of the salary cap side of things and what some of their gun players obviously deserve to put their hand up to get from a contract point of view. So therefore, you know, they're sliding but could lose gun players on the slide, which doesn't help at all. They want to be able to position themselves, sign the gun players and strike again. So I think the next few weeks will really determine that from a Collingwood point of view. So therefore, if they do lose a couple of players through this period, that they might be able to sort of generate underneath and get a couple of guns back in, or they just start to position themselves from a draft point of view again, where if they do lose a couple of guns, get some good draft picks off the back of that, and then start to reposition themselves again. So they're not dropping right down, but they may have a bit of a slide for a year or two just to get things going again.
So they might need to reposition before they slide. The Saints aren't sliding. They're on the climb at the moment. How did you assess their year?
Yeah, excellent year. Brett Ratton showed his class, I think, as a coach in this competition. They recruited really well, and all the recruits stood up throughout the year. And as we know, some, and probably all of them, in fact, can go to another level next year. It starts with Bradley Hill, who I love as a player. But even sort of players like Zach Jones were up and down a little bit throughout the year. So they can be more consistent in terms of what their output is. They'd be really happy, though, with the way they position themselves. I think they'd be really disappointed in their last final against Richmond. I think they had a lot more to offer in that final than what we actually did see from them as a footy club and what they'd done throughout the home and away season and their first final against the Western Bulldogs. So I think for Richmond, for St Kilda, they will use that in terms of where they need to get to as a footy club moving forward into the following pre-season into next year. But they'll stay steady. They'll remain in that mix, I think, for another 12 months or so before we see a real spike from the Saints in probably 2 years' time.
Who wins the Brownlow, Jono? Sunday night, Brownlow night. Who wins the Brownlow? Is Lachie Neal a lock?
I think so. I do. I'd like to see it a little bit closer than what everyone's talking, but Lachie Neal's had an unbelievable year again. He's just been phenomenal, but I don't know. I go to the minor premier, Port Adelaide, and I'm not sure. Well, Travis Boak's the favourite there, and you mentioned Ollie Wines, Whitey. I hope he doesn't take too many votes off him in the last probably six games of the year, because he's the one that's a chance to really tighten the gap on Lachie Neal. Petrarca had an unbelievable year for Melbourne, and has he done enough to get enough votes to challenge Lachie Neal? Probably not, because Lachie Neal's last three games, I think he probably walks away with 9 votes again. So it becomes really difficult to chase this man down. But what a year it would be for the Brisbane Lions, prelim final, maybe going into a grand final, Lachie Neal, Brownlow medal, and the fact that Queensland and the Gabba have had to really, you know, keep footy propped up this year. So yeah. It happens in threes half, so that's probably the way that it'll work out with Lachie Neal taking out the Brownlow medal.
Maybe the stars will align for all up there in Queensland through the next 4 or 5 days, and hopefully beyond for that if it goes their way. Jono, you're a bloody star, you are. Apart from the fact you don't tip us your dog when it wins, we really enjoy your company on a Thursday. Outside of that, everything's good.
Wait till my wife finds out that King of Swing has won, having tipped in last time because she was told to. Peer pressured into backing it. And then this happens.
Don't leave me on that. We'll have a conversation offline. I'm sure I can rectify that problem that we have. But we'll do it offline. We won't do it in the public arena.
Right. I don't mind putting you through the ringer through the public arena. Looks okay for me. Race 6, number 6 tonight. It's NM Park for the King of Swing. Get along and support Jono's Superdog tonight. Jono, we'll catch you next week. Have a great preliminary final weekend.
You too, guys. Always good fun. See you later.